The regular November 2010 meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors will come to order. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag and country.
Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Get into the substance of the meeting. I'd like to briefly acknowledge and congratulate Michael Thompson and Jim Beringer, who have apparently won the two open seats on the Board of Directors, and I think all of my fellow board members will join me in wishing them well, and we're looking forward to having them sworn in. That leads us to item number two, the Sheriff's Department report. Is a representative from the Sheriff's Department here today? Apparently not. The election's over.
I guess it's because we're not having regularly scheduled meetings and he's missed the schedule.
Could be. Yeah. That's probably the – I was being facetious when I commented about the election. That leads us to item number three, acknowledgments and presentations. And we have Richard Margetson here with us today, who is from the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter for the Homeless, and he has a presentation that he would like to make. Mr. Margetson, good to see you this morning, or this afternoon.
Good to see you. Thank you for allowing us the time.
Absolutely.
On the presentation calendar. December 11th, the countywide 5th Annual Needs and Wishes Fundraiser for the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter will be held at the Los Osos Community Center on Los Osos Valley Road. It runs from approximately 10 in the morning till 8 at night. It's right after the Chamber of Commerce Christmas Parade in Los Osos. A recent enumeration study counted or identified 3,800 homeless in San Luis Obispo County. When I came and showed the video, it was either last year or the year before, the number was roughly 2,400 to 2,500. Either the count was wrong then or the economy has had a severe impact on our population in this community. But what has risen that we do know for sure is the children age population that is considered homeless. There are now 1,300 children that are considered homeless in this county. There's actually a liaison through the school district now that just deals with the homeless issue in the school districts. Our event, as of last year, became the largest single fundraiser in the county for the shelter. Last year's total was 45 effort across the county. There is now a piece of property available for a new shelter next to the Department of Social Services in San Luis. There were through most of the approval process with the Airport Land Use Commission, the City Council, the Planning Commission in San Luis. So we're at the point of moving forward with building a new shelter. So you're going to hear more about that in the next couple of years. But this year, from the proceeds of our event, 20% is going to be set aside towards the new shelter. And there's been other generous donors in the county that have stepped up. A gentleman from Los Osos has agreed to donate $200,000 to the new shelter. We just got the commitment letter from him actually Sunday. So we're moving ahead. What's also unique about our event is every penny that's raised that day, everything in the room, the use of the community center, all of the food, all of the toys in the toy store, everything on the silent auction, all the gift certificates, everything is donated by somebody. We have no overhead, not one penny of overhead. So every penny from the event goes to the shelter. Last year, this community over the years has ramped up their support for the event. But last year, as you remember, the children from Coast Union Interact Club, which is basically what we call the Junior Rotary, collected coins. And if you remember, we came and presented their total and $1,391.13. Well, they've ramped up their effort this year. They've There's some competitions among some of the groups. They're going to be at the farmers market, is my understanding, the next 3 weeks. They have jugs in the middle school now. They have jugs in the elementary school. I also heard that there may be canisters at the grocery store, at Cookie Crock, at the registers. They're trying to blow last year's total out of the water. So I wish them luck. So visit them, drop change in their containers. Any of you that have children in school, send change with them. They're really trying to make this happen this year. The event. We have a toy store that is going to have somewhere between 400 and 500 brand new toys. And what we've tried to emphasize over the last year in cooperation with Toys for Tots and Operation Santa Claus through the fire department, through Cal Fire, is if you're going to put a toy in one of those barrels during the holiday season, come buy it at our event, put it in the barrel there, because we'll have both barrels, or bring it back here and put it in a barrel here in town, but you get double the bang for the buck. We get the money. We have Baywood Elementary, the Los Osos Middle School, and the Morro Bay Chamber Choir perform. We have dance, folk dance groups. We have pianists playing Christmas music all day. We also have Santa Claus. And this year, as last year, New Frontiers Natural Food Store in San Luis, which is moving to the Circuit City building, old Circuit City building by Home Depot. Our event is the beneficiary of their 5% day, 5% of total proceeds on November 17th, which is next Wednesday, go to the shelter. So they're going to be in a bigger store, more inventory. We're hoping for more proceeds. Last year, their contribution was about $1,700. The last two things I want to talk about is if anybody's watching, that's why we come before you, because it's free advertising for the next month. Anybody who's interested in contributing or needs more information, please call 528-5800. And if you can't make the event, but you'd like to send a check in to either go towards our event or towards the new shelter, and I think the gentlemen are going to put it up on the screen. Okay.
It's coming up, I think. There it is.
There it is. Send a check made out to Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter. Send it to Box 6721, Los Osos 93412. Again, Box 6721, Los Osos 93412. We hope to see you there. We've been here every year. We appreciate the time to present this before you. Cambria has really come through in the past and they're ramped up, but please help the kids this year. They're really into it. There's actually a banner. If you haven't been to the high school recently, there's a banner on the front of the building that says collecting for the shelter, but the last two lines of the banner say, bring your change to the office, bring change to the world. I think that's pretty appropriate. Thank you. And I have flyers if anybody wants. I'm going to leave them on the table out by the outside door.
Richard, for the benefit of those who will be watching on television, the video on television, do you want to give the phone number if they have questions as well?
Sure. 528-5800.
528-5800. Okay, great. The meeting over to Vice President Clift do the honors, I guess, is the best way to express it. Before I do, I just want to briefly say that, board members, I've enjoyed thoroughly working with each and every one of you and collectively all of us together. I think we have taken the district in a very positive direction, and I'm very proud of that. And, Peter, I want to let you know that I can't think of a word that would pay you a high enough compliment other than to say you're an absolute gentleman. And it's been a real pleasure serving with you for the past 8 years. Thank you for being there when I needed you, and it's been a great ride. Thank you very much. Vice President Clift, I have one request to speak on items B and C. Do you want to have that person come up now, or would you rather do it later? Okay. The one request to speak is from Ron Crummett.
Good afternoon, Mr. President, members of the board. I just wanted to speak briefly. I thought perhaps I might do this after the proclamations, but I think it's obvious that Peter and Greg are going to be leaving us, and we have two new members to keep on the project and keep on the positive emphasis that you guys have done. Peter, 17 years, right? Well, long time. And you've handled it with your usual British wit and your stiff upper lip many times. But you've come through it, and you come through it well, and there's a lot of things that we have in Cambria now that are here because of your efforts. And equally so to you, Greg. But I would say not only the patience that Peter's had, that you have exemplified, but in addition, you've exempted some courage. And you have taken on some very difficult situations and handled it with grace and aplomb. And the reason we're here now with a positive direction after you leave is because of you and your partner there. So thank you is not enough. You're going to get probably more of it in the next room here. But as my wife would say, danke schön. And I would say thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it very much, Ron. Before I do turn the
people that voted for me and that showed confidence in my abilities to take this board, to continue taking this board in the direction that you folks have done so thus far, and I look forward to that. And again, I want to thank you for your years of service, and Peter, you, and for also showing everyone here what kind of leadership this board has, and I thank you again. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mike, and congratulations to you. With that, Vice President Clift, it's all yours.
We can. Is it okay to just do it right here from the? We can move to the podium if
whatever,
you would like.
Whatever you'd like. Whatever is most comfortable for you.
I have the distinct pleasure of reading into the record these two proclamations. When I first saw them, it was obvious that these two individuals have done just a magnificent job and a Herculean job for this community. Generally, when you see a proclamation, it's, you know, but This really does indicate the things that these two gentlemen have done. The first proclamation is for Director Peter Chillicott, and it states, whereas on November 2nd, 1993, Director Chillicott was first elected to the Cambria Community Service District Board of Directors and was reelected November 3rd, 1998, November 2nd, 2002, November 7th, 2006, and to the present. And whereas Peter's professional background includes a lengthy career as a telecommunications engineer in the computer and aerospace industries and has been a Cambria resident since 1992, whereas directors of the board are required to give considerable personal time to performance in the position of director, Peter dedicated himself to service in the position of director on the CCSD Board of Directors for 17 years. And whereas in his role as CCSD director, served as board president from 2002, 2003, and 2006, 2007, was a member of the California Special District Association, Association of California Water Agencies, Region 5, Water Reuse Association, and served on the CCSD ad hoc historical knowledge of CCSD. His thought-provoking comments and ability to listen and understand all sides of the issue, his commitment and balance to both his constituents and the CCSD, as well as his ability to bring colleagues to consensus. And whereas, though through Director Chalcott's diligence and guidance in working with other directors to formulate and evaluate CCSD policy. Completed many projects during his two decades, including wastewater treatment plant upgrade, relocation, design, and construction of Burton Drive Fire Station 57, facilitated building of the east-west public restrooms in the early 1990s, the design and permit of a desalination project in 1996, completion of SR4 emergency replacement well due to threats of MTBE contamination, crosstown trail project, water conservation and retrofit program, Molinari Ranch open space and watershed protection project, CCSD municipal code, CCSD measure P06 enacting permanent preservation of Cambria's precious water resources, Cambria community plan update, SLO Chamber local coastal program, water master plan, east-west ranch connection pipeline, SLO County land conservation lot transfer to CCSD, special projects area, Main Street lighting, Pine Knolls tanks project, build out reduction program, voluntary lot merger program, Army Corps of Engineers project cooperative agreement, fire code adoption, incorporation feasibility study, Fiscalini West Ranch Bluff Trail, Fiscalini Ranch Preserve Marine Terrace Trail, Guthrie Bianchini Museum, New Youth Center, Concerts in the Park, demolition and site restoration of Center Street CCSD office, water meter replacement project, Fiscalini Ranch Master Development Plan, Cambria Tennis Club Courts, designation of Veterans Memorial Building, biosolids dewatering, non-potable reclamation water, Leffingwell Bridge relocation project, and whereas his wealth of knowledge, diligence, and countless hours of effort and enthusiastic energy spent on policymaking, promoting conservation, understanding water law, and supporting desalination technology to promote public awareness and comes for continued success in his future endeavor. And it's signed by all board members. Now you can see why it's going to be a hard job to replace the history that Peter brings. Peter, do you would like to have the microphone for?
Okay, thank you. Well, that's like fast forward on forwarding on your TV. That's 17 years in 17 seconds. But you were describing the works of a whole board. It wasn't a one person thing, and. I give credit to every board member that voted yes on whatever project that we were involved in. And I will say that when I came to Cambria, I wanted to get involved in something, and I saw there was a bicycle advisory committee. So that sounds like me. So I wrote in and got refused. And so I looked for something else. I ended up on the CCSD. So be careful what you get turned down from. But I would just say that... And there's a real difference between when I was elected and now. In 93, it was hard to get people to serve. You know, the rocks and boulders were throwing in all direction. There'd been a recall attempt, and I was one of two people who said we wouldn't mind serving. There was really a lack of people who wanted to serve on the board. And I'm glad to say now that I think that's turned around. We get really quality people running for the board, and the town benefits from that. And let's hope we keep it up. I would just say that when I came on board, it was in the Reggie Perkins presidency, and he, along with John Angel and Pat Childs and General Manager Dave Andrus, were really getting things moving. As you said, they in that short time, they got the desal plant ready to go. They had a wastewater treatment plant, and they got the fire station set up. And they're doing so well that there was a recall because people don't like change in Canberra. And fortunately, it was unsuccessful, and then I went on to get elected on the board, and we completed those projects all within a period of, well, for them for about 8 years, and for me for five. And it was good times and bad times, because then they were taken off the board. I became the minority member, which is kind of a place I never want to be again. And It wasn't until Don Villeneuve came along and we had to get a new general manager because they fired the general manager. That all was a good news. We went through the vote where we had a Blue Ribbon Committee to study water sources, and we had a successful vote, advisory vote, on desal. East-West Ranch came along, and again, that was a big project. It was ironic that I lived too close. I couldn't vote on any of the projects for East-West Ranch, but as soon as it became within the purview of the district, then I could vote, and it was nice to do that and get the trails organized. I think that that, again, was a whole series of ups and downs where people were afraid that it was going to be fenced off and no more access to East-West Ranch. Things like that, all which became really real in the community. And now that the park is way open, we just accept it. There it is, along with some nice trails. Then into the new century, and that's where I think things really needed to happen, because we pretty well needed direction. That's where Greg, who I really appreciate, Greg, and Joan came on board, and we started setting new goals for the district. And we did that. We got the Measure P, which meant that we would have definite boundaries for Cambria. We decided how big the town would be. These are all things that were hot potatoes up till then, and I think we put those things to bed, and I appreciate that. And we got the new youth center. We, working with Mid-State Bank, we got the building moved, and I appreciate Joan for your spearheading that job. And the concerts in the park that were mentioned, they were all things that happened. So a lot happened at that point. We had Vern Hamilton came on board as assistant general manager, and that time a lot happened. A lot of things that we couldn't see our way through, he cut right through. Being a fireman, he knew you cut through the door. And that's what he did. And then Tammy came on, and I think from there on we've had a real steady growth of procedures and accomplishments, which I think we build on a daily or weekly basis. I was fortunate to be able to sign the agreement with the Army Corps of Engineers. I was president that year. And that has meant, in 06, we've had 4 years of off and on and steady work with the Corps. And I think this is just coming to the point where we can leave it for somebody else to do. And that's what we're like. I would just say that I do appreciate the CSSD employees. Over the years, I've got to know them, and I've got to say they're hard workers. And I've never met one who said, oh, I haven't got time to talk to you. They always have time to discuss what they're doing, why they're doing it. And I appreciate that. And the point is that we have less employees now, and they're doing half today. That you have to do it for a fifth time. And I'd like to thank my wife, Pam, who's always supported me, and then other people in the community that helped me be elected were John Angel, Dave Crowther, Pat and Ben Bolden, and Ron and Helga Crummett. To get elected, you have to have people working with you, and those people have shown up every time I had to be elected, and I do appreciate it. And it's nice for me to say to Jim and Mike, off you go. Thank you very much.
The second proclamation I have here is on that proclamation of yours, I used a date of March 6th or something there. We'll make sure that when I looked at it, when I read it, I thought something popped, yeah. And I've been thinking about that. This is dated November 10th.
Perhaps they're hoping I'd leave.
Did we tire you early?
We got you around longer than you think, Peter. Whereas on November 5th, 2002, President Sanders was first elected to the Cambria Community Service District Board of Directors and reelected November 7th, 2006 to the present. And whereas in support of his personal well-being, incumbent Greg Sanders, having served with dedication for 8 years, withdrew his candidacy for the November 2nd, 2010 election, and his absence on the board will be heartfelt. And whereas Greg's professional career includes more than 30 years as an attorney specializing in land use entitlements, environmental and real estate transaction law with a BA California State University Fullerton, 1972, MA California State University Fullerton, 1993, and J.D. Pepperdine University School of Law, 1977, relocating to Cambria from Orange County in 1996. And whereas he has extensive experience in local, state, and federal water and flood control issues. He served as an administrative assistant to a member of Congress and executive assistant to a member of the Board of Supervisors. He has worked with state legislature and staff to enact legislation authorizing the Santa Ana River Mainstream Flood Control Project, San Joaquin, Foothill, and conservation and water use within its community attests to his wisdom, dedication, and commitment to resolve Cambria's water supply challenges. And whereas he was a founding member of the Cambria Land Conservancy, he led the effort to establish and implement the CCSD's build-out reduction program, successful voluntary lot merger program, and has worked to secure financial support from conservation agencies for lot reduction and raise community awareness regarding the benefits of reducing water demand. And whereas in his role as CCSD director, served as board president from 2005-2006 and 2009-2010, was a member of the California Special Districts Association, Association of California Water Agencies, Region 5, serving as the CCSD's representative as a member of the ACWA Local Government Committee, Water Reuse Association, and served in CCSD ad hoc committees that included executive, finance, budget, state and federal government relations, litigation advisory, Cambria Community Healthcare District Cooperative Project, Lot Reduction Project, Cambria CSD, San Simeon CSD Committee, Blue Ribbon Incorporation Committee, Emergency Medical Services Committee, Fire Code Committee, Utilities Committee, Build Out Reduction Program Committee. And whereas many projects were completed during his two terms, including Crosstown Trail Project, Water Conservation and Retrofit Program, Molinari Ranch Open Space and Watershed Protection Project, CCSD Municipal Code, CCSD Measure P06 Enacting Permanent Preservation of Cambria's Precious Water Resources, Cambria's Community Plan Update, SLO County Local Coastal Program, Water Master Plan, East-West Ranch Coordinated Pipeline, SLO County Land Conservancy Lot Transfer to CCSD, Special Projects Area 2, Main Street Lighting, Pine Knolls Tanks Project, Belt Out Reduction Program, Voluntary Lot Merger Program, Army Corps of Engineer Project Cooperative Agreement, Fire Code Adoption, Incorporation Feasibility Study, Water Meter Replacement Project, Fiscalini Ranch Bluff Trail, Fiscalini Ranch Preserve Marine Trail, Guthrie Ball Cambrians, on this day of November 10th, 2010, I hereby present to President Sanders this proclamation of public recognition, extending to him our deep appreciation for his distinguished service and best wishes for continued success and best of health in all of his future endeavors. And it's signed by the board members. And if you...
Sure.
Sure.
Did you get it?
Did you get it?
Okay.
Here, you want to use this one?
The paper wrong. That's the wrong.
Yeah. There we go. Don't get too.
Right on.
There we go.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Right. Yeah. I'll take this opportunity to say a few things. First of all, I'd like to echo everything that Peter said and reiterate what a pleasure it's been to have served with Peter over the past 8 years. And once again, Peter, you're the consummate gentleman, and I really appreciate the opportunity to serve with you. The proclamations are very nice, but as everybody knows, I'm sure, it's a corporate entity here. That is, we have five board members, and it takes a team effort to make things happen. And it's really been a pleasure being part of a team. This board and prior boards, having served with Joan Coben, I see her in the back. It really takes an effort on the part of all board members to move things forward. Nothing gets done on account of just one individual, and that includes the staff as well. You have to have a really good staff in order to get things accomplished. And I think the results, personally, I think the results of the election last week are very gratifying. The people have spoken, and I believe what the people in Cambria have said very loudly is that the CCSD should continue to go in the direction that it has been going, at least for the past couple of years. And so, board members, I think you're going to the grocery store or to get a cup of coffee or out to dinner. It's unavoidable. You're going to run into somebody who has a bone to pick with the CCSD. What I found over the years, I found two safe havens. One at Ben and Pat Bolden's house, where we call it wine time, where we sit down and kind of rehash events and reassure each other that everything's going to be okay. And I want to thank you very much for providing that haven. And Ron and Helga Crummett, same to you. Thank you very much for being there, always being there when I needed you. Finally, I think that board members serve the community best when they reach out to the community. And I know that this board, and me in particular, have been accused of all manner of sins, not the least of which is dividing the community. Let me tell you that there's certainly no intent on the part of any board member up here to divide the community. We happen to have, with regard to solving the water supply problem in Cambria, a bunch of choices, none of which are good. And no matter what this board does, there are going to be people who are opposed to whatever direction the board takes. But long before I moved to Cambria full-time, I knew Walt Sterling, who served on the first CCSD board back in the mid-1970s. I think a lot of you who have lived in town for a while may have known Walt. Katie is still around, living in the same house. And Walt gave me a bit of advice after I was elected. He said, "Son, Cambria works like this. People in town will line up on Main Street on both sides of the street, and there'll be a referee in the middle of the street who will call out an issue, and people will throw rocks at one another across the street. And then the referee will blow the whistle, and he'll announce issue number two. And a few people will change sides by crossing the street, and then they'll start throwing rocks at one another." The real serious opposition to a project like DSAL is rooted in growth. It's rooted in what I think is an unfounded fear that somehow a project like desalination is going to unleash unlimited growth and that there will be no stopping it because the Pacific Ocean is the water source, and it's a virtual unlimited supply of water. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what the build-out reduction program is all about. When I was first elected, two people who are here today supported another candidate. That candidate was Vern Kalshen, who, by the way, I think is a very fine gentleman, and Vern Kalshen and I are friends. After the election, Wayne Ryburn and Bill Warren, who are seated in the front row on my left, your right, were part of an outreach effort where we all got together and we conceived and began to implement the build-out reduction program. And Wayne and Bill, I want to thank you very much for your efforts working on that. I think over the course of 8 years, we've become friends, whereas previous to that, we were on opposite sides of many of the issues. And it's a testament to how cooperation and kind of sublimating one's ego can work wonders. It just takes reasonable people seated around a table, hashing out the issues to come to grips with some of the difficult uncertainties about a project like DSAL and work on something like a growth cap. And I think it was very successful, and I'm looking forward to it being implemented. It's been a real honor to serve the people of Cambria. It's been a great ride for 8 years. It's now time for somebody else to take over and hopefully listen to the voice of the people and keep this district going in the direction it has been going for the past few years. Thank you very much.
I personally want to say that you're talking about 25 years of history, leaving 6 years of history here to finish up. So
work that is behind closed doors. I don't mean that. I mean it at home. I mean it the times that you've spent going to Washington, doing so many things that people don't realize the magnitude of this job. And I hope this doesn't scare Mike away now. But it has been a privilege to work with both you and Peter. And with respect to you, Greg, I've worked on a number of boards, and I have never experienced a better chairman than you.
Well, thank you.
And you've had some difficult times here, and you've handled it very well. You've been you tried to be transparent in all your actions. You gave excessive time in some cases to the podium speaker, and I think it's remarkable. You've made this board perform, I think, to the level that it should have performed. With respect to Peter, I know that right out of high school you joined the board. And it's amazing in our dialogues over the last couple years of your history. And that is incredibly important, I think, for the future as well. And if there's two directors that deserve emeritus status, it is you two. For your land use experience, I don't know how we're going to get that. Merle picked that up in his spare time. And Peter, for the historical content and your logic, it's been a pleasure working with you both. And I hope that you stay with us. Don't leave us completely.
Thank you very much.
Be there for us.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate it.
I think the proclamations are phenomenal. Appreciate bringing everything to the forefront of what these two gentlemen have done and what the past boards have done. It's my nature to look at accomplishments. Efforts are good and well-intentioned on a lot of people's, but it's hard to get accomplishments done. And accomplishments are only done with people like Peter and also Greg. In the sense, and I think both of them raised that issue, is that even for people who look at items and problems differently, the fact is some items and problems have to be hours to read and go through things that you sit and look at and try to take both positions, which I think both of you have shown a unique capability to do that. So I think that hopefully will maybe bring some items of interest and understanding to our new members and to myself, because I get to be hard-nosed sometimes, most of the time. And what I would like to do is thank you for that example of what it is to truly be representative of the people by doing things which improve the community. Because the communities, for the most part, our whole country is usually split one way or the other. That's why it's 50 plus one, because people realize human nature being what it is. But that consensus to move that position so that we get a majority, or luck in some cases, in many cases, you've been able to get a consensus once the issue at hand is broken down into enough pieces that everyone can understand. And that's a unique talent, and I have to say, I appreciate it. And, you know, we, as you get gray, my father-in-law used to say, don't say anything till you get some gray hair. But I, as Alan said, you know, being on boards, being with corporations, being with other communities, usually from the engineering side, but watching how communities work, you two exemplify what it is to manage the political process such that we continue to get accomplishments done. And to bring that up, and I appreciate, again, differences we have at times, but a staff and accomplishment to carry out and accomplish the things is a whole nother realm of problems and issues that board members and both Peter and Greg have been good enough and well-versed enough to recognize that with the staffs and the operating people out in the field. Differences don't mean that you don't appreciate the work that's done, but that's the appreciation of the community should be. The list of accomplishments for a town of 6,000 people is wonderful on a relatively limited budget, in the sense that our costs are still relatively low when you look at, I mean, nobody wants to see the water bills of L.A., but the reality is these accomplishments have been carried through and implemented through a good process of austerity to a certain extent. And we hope to continue that and focus on expenditures, which will
express any feelings you have directly to Peter and Greg. So we'll take a half hour break.
Meeting will come back to order. We've completed items 1, 2, and 3, so we'll move on to item number 4, which is the agenda review. Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda or consent calendar items to be pulled for separate consideration? Apparently not. The agenda, therefore, will stand as published. That takes us to item number 5, which is the first public comment period for the meeting. And I have several requests to speak. The first is from Jo Ellen Butler.
Good afternoon, Joel. Board. I was going to wait for you to finish.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, and I'd like to say congratulations to both Greg and Peter today. It's wonderful, and thank you for your service to us, the citizens of this little town. And I'm here to invite the board and the audience to come to Hands Across the Ranch on Saturday at 11 o'clock prompt at the Marine Terrace Trail. And we're celebrating the 10th anniversary of the purchase of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. At the time, it was called East West Ranch. And we're going to have a photo op with everybody holding hands and holding ribbons across the ranch. And then we'll have a light lunch and lemonade and activities following that that have to do with the ranch. And we'd really love it if you would come. And then the other announcement I'd like to make is to please join us on Sunday, November 28th at 10 a.m. at the Tipton Trailhead for our annual Thanksgiving weekend tree planting on the ranch. And just wear layered clothing, wear a hat to keep the sun off of you, bring gloves and a shovel if you can, and we'll have extra tools too. And we plant trees on the ranch every year on the Sunday after Thanksgiving to work off the feast and also to help replenish the Monterey Pine Forest. Thank you.
You're getting a lot of thank yous, but I don't think you can get too many. And as a whole, I wish to thank you, and then I'd like to make a couple of other comments. My name is Ron Bates, and I'm pleased to be a Cambria homeowner for over 5 years. I'm here to offer thanks and encouragement to you for your continued efforts to bring a workable solution to Cambria's water shortage. With the November 2nd election, it looks like the majority of Cambria student citizens agree with you, agree that you are on the right track, and support the direction that you are going. I know that this meeting, we are here to acknowledge two directors who have worked tirelessly for many years for the betterment of Cambria. I consider Mr. Sanders and Mr. Chalcott to be statesmen. I know that both are humble men and would not accept this mantle willingly. I paraphrase a quote by President Woodrow Wilson. Your real statesman is, first of all, a great human being with an eye for all the fields of which men like himself struggle, with unflagging hope toward better things. He is a guide, a counselor, a mentor, a servant, and a friend of Cambria. I hope that you will both continue in that role. I say again, thank you for your service. And I say in the words of William Shakespeare, fair thoughts and happy hours attend you. The gentleness of all the gods go with thee. To our newly elected directors, Mr. Thompson and Mr. Barringer, I say welcome and congratulations on your election to the board, with a couple of short quotes again from Shakespeare. At first and last, a hearty welcome. Welcome hither as the spring to the earth. And a quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson. Nothing great was ever achieved without enthusiasm. I encourage you to maintain your enthusiasm and your optimism, and I thank you for the good you will do for Cambria. Thank you again to all board members for your unceasing efforts to keep Cambria healthy and moving forward. Thank you.
Ron, thank you very much. When you were quoting from Shakespeare and talking about Peter and myself, I was afraid you were going to quote from Shakespeare the famous line, first let's kill all the lawyers.
If that's okay.
That's fine with me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gary. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Interested Cambrians. My name is Vance Hyde, and I have been asked by Valerie Bentz to read this short statement. This is what Valerie has to say to all of you today. I am happy that the CCSD board election is over and that it did not get contentious as so many political races do. I think we all ran good and honorable campaigns. I wanted to be at this board meeting, indeed want to be at most board meetings, and will be in the future. But I have to miss this November meeting as plans set long ago take Steve and me to San Francisco. I want to say also that my having lost by only 46 votes, which is less than 2% difference of the total votes cast for myself and Mr. Barringer, more than suggests that the positions and concerns I represent reflect a significant number of Cambrians. I hope to continue to reflect their feelings at these meetings well into the future. I thank you, Valerie Bentz.
Thank you very much for reading that. Appreciate it. Harry, would you like to come back up?
I'm not quite so sure that I necessarily want to read exactly what I have planned here, so kind of winging it, I guess, but I might read
this.
That's
okay.
One thing I do want to say with Joellen Butler coming up and reminding us that it was 10 years ago that we were able to finally put the stamp on saving the East-West Ranch. And one of my most valuable memories when I leave here, whenever that might be, will be being involved in saving that ranch from development. It was one of the more contentious issues since I've been in this community, and saving this very special magical spot in the jewel, which is the focal point of the jewel of the Central Coast, which is what this community is, was quite heartwarming. I don't necessarily know how to state this, but a number of us have gotten up here over the years and addressed the desalination issue, addressed the fiscal and environmental impact. Community favored the desalination project. I believe that this recent election, where Ms. Benz and I garnered almost 47% of the vote, paints a different picture, that there is a large percentage of citizens in this community who feel very strongly about this issue and do not approve of the way things have been dealt with, whether it be the fiscal or environmental concerns of this project. And I just want to speak up at this moment and remind the members of the board, members of the district, and those that are watching on television or may go to the website for Slow Span, that the people that voted for Ms. Benz and I, we now have a voice. We can no longer be considered this very small but vocal minority. We are a meaningful and valuable part of this community. And I hate to say that we demand, but we do not, we no longer wish to be disrespected. That's how many of us feel things have been over the years. We feel that we demand respect. We're deeply caring people about for this community. And personally, I intend to remain an advocate for truth and for what is right and good and true for this town as I see it and as so many of us do. Thank you very much. And for Mother Earth, by the way. That's a very powerful part of my constituency is Mother Earth. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. The next request to speak is from Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders. First thing I'd like to say is thank you very much to Mr. Chaldecott and Mr. Sanders for your long dedication to this community. And I know you both love this community and will continue to follow the activities of the CCSD and various other groups that you belong to and hope to see you frequently.
Thank you.
On behalf of another board member that's no longer here, Mr. Funky Blue, it's been 3,283 days since the moratorium was declared, nearly 9 years. It has been over 9 years since the last letters of intent went out. Since then, the district had promotion of the lot mergers, which I noticed from a report in today's agenda, even more have been retired. Installed new electric meters and reduced water loss from about over 12% to about 8%. And with new standards of efficiency, and combined with the county policy and ordinances to keep the rate of growth to less than 1% to protect our water supply from depletion due to new connections, I formally request that this board review and reconsider the need for and appropriateness of the Water Code Section 350 emergency declaration at a public hearing. In science, says Carl Sagan, it often happens that scientists say, you know, that's a really good argument. My position is mistaken. And then they actually change their minds, and you never hear that old view from them again. They really do it. It doesn't happen as often as it should because scientists are human and change is sometimes painful. But it happens every day. I cannot recall the last time something like that happened in politics or religion. I'd just like to send off Mr. Sanders and Chaldecott with a quote from Edward Abbey, which I hope you will appreciate. May all your trails be crooked, winding, lonesome, dangerous, leading, and the most amazing view, where something strange and more beautiful and more full of wonder than your deepest dreams waits for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I have no more requests to speak for the first public comment period. So that will take us on to item number 6, which is managers and board reports, and we'll begin with the general manager's report. Madam General Manager.
Excuse me. I was just reminding in the first part of this manager's report about next month's meeting, because it's a different time. It's Monday, December 13th at 12:30, so that's off of our fourth Thursday schedule. This month, because there was only 2 weeks in between the last meeting and today, Van Skoyek's report, he'll actually just combine these 2 months into one report for next month, so that's why you don't see one on this staff report. I did attach, and I'm just reminded, seeing Ron Crumman in the crowd, that I didn't send it off to the committee before, and I typically do that, but the voluntary lot merger program quarterly report is up to date, and I'll get that sent out to your committee when I get back to work. We're happy to report that 129 lots have been reduced this calendar year. There are only 111 more lots to reduce to meet the new merger goal. And the total cost of the program through September 2010 is $31,124. And those are funds that are specifically
available at virtually no cost to the
Our goal is to try to get it out in the next one. Ron likes to remind me of that as well. So we've got it on our list to do.
Super.
Okay, so... And then Landwatch litigation update. I have two things to report. So Landwatch 1 and Landwatch 2, that's how we designate the two cases. We attached the judgment that I actually personally served on Landwatch's attorney, Cynthia Hawley. It's been a week or so ago. On November 1st, it was entered in Slo County Superior Court, and they were ordered to pay those costs of the administrative record totaling $23,294. So that judgment has been put in place, and we'll see what happens as a result after that. Landwatch 2, Judge Regali of Santa Barbara County Superior Court set a January 31st, 2011 hearing. He's calling it a case management conference. That's what CMC stands for. And that's when he'll determine whether there's anything left in the case. If he doesn't get anything substantive from Landwatch, it's going to be dismissed. So those are two victories, and I just wanted to make sure we reported that. Also, right below that, I update on the litigation costs, the cases you see there. The last time I reported to you in August of this year, there was a total of $150,330, and to date, or through October 2010, $170,839. Most of the activity was in Joe Lindsay's case, and then you'll see a little bit in the Landwatch 1 and then a lot in Landwatch 2 just because of the court appearances by Mike McMahon of Carmel and Akasha. So, and this doesn't reflect on the costs, the actual legal costs, because they're very good at containing them. This is just a true picture of what the costs have been to date.
You know, just to translate that into something meaningful for the district's customers, when you talk about $170,839 just in 2010, that's about 10%. Of the water budget. About 10% on your bill is attributable to litigation. And I have to say it again, these lawsuits are absolutely frivolous. And I think anybody who reads Judge Tangeman's decision in Landwatch 1 will come to understand that the litigation was absolutely unnecessary. It went nowhere. It was destined for failure. And it's, quite frankly, to me, it's just shameful.
Emergencies or interruptions in service can be reported to our 24-hour answering service at 927-6223. And then our next PROS, Parks and Recreation Open Space Commission meeting, it will be Tuesday, December 7th. And note the time, it's 5 p.m. This is their annual get-together here at the Vets Hall. Moving on to the finance manager's report, he posted the first quarter revenue and expenditure report from July 1st through September 30th. It's out on the website. Al reports that there were no expenditures in excess of $100,000. And then he reports that the LAIF fund balance as of October 31st was $3,948,432. And notes that when you go back 2 years, this balance has been higher for the same month. He attaches the October 31st external loan list. The rest of this information we basically provided to you a couple of weeks ago in the last staff report. You'll see on page 12 our first utilities manager's report. Now, it's pretty basic right now, but that's because Jerry Gruber on November 1st. He's here with us today, and so these are all of his meetings that he's met with all of us. We talked about performance objectives and goals and projects. He has a long list, by the way. And then he's familiarizing himself within the utilities themselves, and he has responsibility for facilities and resources as well with Ben. And then he makes a note that the current well levels, they're out on the website. They're on the webpage under well levels and water. And so he's just getting his feet wet. So we'll see a report
from
him
now.
No
pun intended.
Yeah, that's right. Every month. Moving on to the desal and water storage facilities report. Oh, I'm sorry. So that's the end of the manager's report. I apologize.
Okay. Any questions of the general manager on the general manager's report?
Yeah, just one. It was mentioned, I think, that we didn't have any money in the lot retirement program, but looks like there's $41,000.
Absolutely,
yeah,
Peter.
Okay.
That's a good point to make. I should have probably said what the balance is. So the balance remaining is $41,971.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Okay. Madam General Manager?
6B is our desalination water storage facilities report, and I'm just going to start it off by indicating that the final presentation of the three-part series on the desal project, entitled Project Cost Estimates and Financing Options, is a separate item today on today's agenda. And then I'm going to turn it over because Bob was the contributor for those next two paragraphs, just giving an update on the geotechnical investigation.
That was the right-of-entry permit from State Parks. The basis of that was a map that showed up kind of late in the information gathering process, well after the coastal consistency determination hearing of May 13th back up in, I think that was Santa Cruz where we're at. The fact that it's now, the beach area is identified as a natural preserve by State Parks, meant there was no allowance for motorized vehicles to be out there. Of course, the tracked equipment that the Corps was proposing to use there was considered a motorized vehicle by State Parks. Despite a number of efforts, I think, by the Corps to address that issue, there was another impediment as far as potential, what they were calling the exploitation of a resource. And that was associated with probably a 2 to 4 inch diameter core sample. They called that an exploitation of a resource. I didn't agree with that, but I'm not an attorney, and the October 31 deadline went past the Corps. That deadline was set by the Coastal Commission back in May to avoid potential impacts to migrating steelhead. So they only had the September-October window to work with. So to make a long story short, because of that lack of a right of entry by State Parks to the Army Corps, the work is incomplete still. So we're brainstorming, you know, our next steps, you know, with Army Corps. What's going to happen next on that particular effort? How do we address that concurrently with developing various alternatives? As you know, the Army Corps has two contracts in place, one with CDM to start developing preliminary alternatives that will go into an EIR, EIS document. So we needed that data to help define certain alternatives. So that's hung up at the moment as far as that particular location. And the Corps also has the Chambers Group. So they're working closely. I think there was quite a discussion at the last meeting, as I recall, as far as the coordination between the environmental work and the design work, and that is ongoing, although it's very preliminary in its efforts at this point. So that's the gist of what questions you might have.
Any questions of the district engineer, Director Chaldicott?
Yes. The map that you've included is neither signed nor dated. I'm just wondering, do they have anything better than that?
Yes, I did get a response back to a public information request I made to Sacramento on that, and it was very similar. This was an unsigned map, said proposed, but there are meeting minutes and other things that corresponded with that I need to go through yet. This is a recent email that I'd received on that, so I'm going to go through that in detail, but I'm trusting that it is indeed an approved natural preserve from what I received so far to date.
Okay. I appreciate that wonderful attitude of trust. But as you said before, you're not counsel. I want to make sure that this isn't a red herring. There are many documents which flow through every government agency known to man. You can have any biologist or any group of people make proposals into an organization. There can be minutes of meetings. But as learned counsel, I would hope, says, unless there's a resolution, a designation, some sort of codification of this, it's already done damage to us as far as I'm concerned. It's also something, if, you know, what little I've had in the case issues that I've been, to come up with this Hail Mary document at the last moment after the Coastal Commission had made decisions based on what they thought was adequate notice and adequate information. I can't imagine the state parks didn't have any communication with Coastal Commission during the process. If they did, that's their issue, not ours. But to bring this in at the last moment did damage our ability to do the exploration which necessarily needs to be done. And serves no purpose, because if, in fact, any of this exploration would have negated the ability to do what we needed to do, it didn't serve, shall we say, the other parties who are saying it's not a good spot to go. So it didn't serve us, because we hope it will be the right place to be. It didn't serve them, because we don't have any further information, so we can't stop the idea of investigating it. So what did it do? It's an obstructionist move with no real resolution. As I said before, things need to be accomplished. Even an accomplishment of a kind of confirmation that you're not going to be able to do it would have been beneficial, and we'll have to live with what we live with. But unless this is unacceptable, some sheet of paper that no one even had the capability or wherewithal to sign. Jumping through hoops to try to get the right documentation for a good sprinkler code, and here somebody creates a natural preserve by having some meetings. There's meetings going on everywhere. So I'm just so you know, it's an objection to even accepting this, and I hope the Corps, I don't know what their efforts are, but I'm sure that we need to confirm one way or the other. So thank you.
Here. Thank you. I agree. And just to add to what I've read so far, it seems like the purpose of that natural preserve was to protect steelhead and tidewater goby, the inland riparian wooded area, but nothing to deal with the beach where we wanted to put our sample hole. So in my opinion, the project that's being pursued is actually going to be beneficial to those same species by providing a supply that's independent of the aquifer and that same riparian community that they were concerned about protecting. So it is counterproductive from that standpoint, and also they're also a customer of ours. I mean, the State Parks Campground off of San Simeon Road is a customer of the CCSD for both water and wastewater. So I was flabbergasted by it, but we'll keep moving forward.
I just want to touch on that, because that's a good point, and I appreciate what they might have been doing if they were doing that. And here's my scenario. They did that thinking they were going to try to protect steelhead. Probably Fish and Game got a hold of this and said, you don't need all that. We have all the powers we need under protective acts to stop anybody from hurting the steelhead. As which, and I have to say, the Coastal Commission did their job, I guess, by saying, hey, you can do your exploration, but you got to stop here because this is the migratory period. So the protection of the steelhead was never at issue, even with our permit, as far as I understand. So, and it could have been what happened there, too. People did what they thought was right, and from what you're reading, it may have been for the protective, and somebody says, well, you don't need that. We have the power of the federal government on endangered species. Please don't, you don't even need to do that. But anyway, that's...
The thing is, without a legal document,
there is no preserve. If there's a preserve...
We're going to have a change of administrations in Sacramento, and there will probably be, at some point, the appointment of a new Secretary of Resources. I think it's very important for the district to continue to be engaged with whoever is appointed Secretary of Resources. I think the Corps of Engineers will have the dialogue, but it's important that the district stay involved in the process as well. There are ways to deal with this issue. They're not easy, but they can be dealt with. And so I would encourage the board, the staff, to continue to work that angle so that this problem can be solved and the Corps can get out there and do the work that has to be done during the next window that comes up in September of 2011. May have to go back to the Coastal Commission. Don't know yet, but if it has to go back to the Coastal Commission, it's a process that has to be gone through. I would think that given the vote at the Coastal Commission, 8-1 in favor of the geotechnical testing, that it shouldn't be too much of a problem. It's just that the commission now has to look at the geotechnical testing in light of this so-called nature preserve, if in fact it actually exists. Also, I think we need to keep in mind, too, it's really not time lost in the overall. It would be nice to have the information now, but the environmental impact report, environmental impact statement, is a process that takes a minimum of 18 months. There's a lot of work that has to be done that's kind of generic. So if the Corps can get out there in September of 2011 and get whatever information it can accrue from completion of the geotechnical project into the environmental impact report and environmental impact statement, at the end of the day, there won't be any time lost. But the district is just going to have to really stay on top of this and make sure that that right of entry permit gets approved at some point. Bob, any more?
I think you summed it up very well, and that's the...
Is there some way we can set some kind of a timeline that says, you either come up with your objections or what you're going to stuff in front of us, or we take you to court or whatever we have to do. But yeah. But I would say right now, the local state parks, and I'll limit it to local, is no friend to this district, and you should remember that in any of your dealings with them. And that's for public consumption.
Very good. Board members, any other comments or questions? Okay, we'll move on then to item 6C, member and committee reports. Any board member or board committee reports? Hearing.
I have one thing,
yes,
to report.
Director Clift.
The actions we took on the compensation disclosure will be highlighted in CSDA's magazine upcoming here in the next, either the next issue or the December issue.
Wow.
So
you were right. It had some impact.
Yeah.
Very good. Any other comments from board members? Okay, that takes us to item 7, which is the consent agenda. No items have been pulled for separate consideration, so we'll have the general manager read the consent agenda for those who are watching on television.
Okay, thank you. 7A is to approve the expenditures for the month of October 2010. 7B is to approve the minutes of the Board of Directors meeting October 28, 2010. And 7C is to consider Resolution 58-2010 authorizing revisions to the agreement between the CCSD and Brad Clark.
Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda as read?
I'll make a motion to accept the consent agenda as read.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda as read. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. There are no hearings and appeals today, so we'll move on to item 9, regular business. Item 9A is consideration of Resolution 59-2010, authorizing extended payment plan for the Cambria Tennis Club to repay its secondary promissory note with the Cambria Community Services District. Madam General Manager.
Okay, thank you. This action item is actually going to preserve $5,053 of CCSD general fund revenues, and this is an original commitment that the Cambria Tennis Club made with the CCSD back in 2007. Just as way of a little background, the project was, and then the Cambria Tennis Club did the promissory note of $20,631 the CCSD approved, and that's the one they paid in full on September 23rd when they presented their final payment, that first promissory note. The total cost of that project was $210,737, okay? So I mentioned that they made the payment on September 23rd. There were these cost overruns. The final billing to the CCSD was a total of $10,106, and those were authorized change orders. And then we negotiated with the tennis club and agreed that we would split the cost equally. And therefore, a secondary promissory note was approved by the board on May 24, 2007, per Resolution 40-2007. And so the Cambria Tennis Club owes an additional $5,053 by this secondary promissory note. Again, no interest, single payment by its due September 1st of 2012. Now, when I shared this staff report and in communications with Janos Benny, he's the president of the tennis club, he wanted to add what I have on page 34, which is, in addition to supporting the school teams and conducting tennis clinics for the youth, the Cambria Tennis Club continues to be responsible for all court maintenance and has drawn down its reserves by making capital improvements. And he lists an example in 2009-2010 that the club purchased badly needed new court gear and equipment and replaced 420 by 9 feet of windscreens. And much of that was due to storm damage. So they are, like most nonprofit organizations, struggling to keep up its active membership and their annual fundraising activities. And today it's before you because they've requested that the CCSD forgive the debt repayment. So they don't want to pay the $5,053, or they want you to consider to forgive it. So when I had a conference call with President Sanders and Vice President Clift on October 28th, I discussed this item, and it was Vice President Clift that suggested an extended payment plan, a 5-year or 10-year plan for them. Repayment would continue to the CCSD with no interest. The first payment would be due by their date, September 1st, 2012. Under such extension, they would, I outlined the two plans. 5-year plan, they'd have to pay $1,010.60 each year. 10 years, it would be $505.30. And so you have the three options listed there on page 34. And by the way, I did talk to Janos, and Janos said that they would accept a payment plan as well. Okay, they would prefer that it be forgiven, and that's your first option, to forgive them in its entirety. And then the second one is to approve a 10-year payment plan, and then the third one is to approve a 5-year. And then I'll revise the second promissory note and then just have it in the file, and we'll set it up for a payment plan if you approve it today in finance.
Question. There would be some,
as a receivable,
and obviously by the doing the math here, it's interest free.
Mm-hmm. It's interest free, just like the first note.
Right. Director Clift, did you?
Yeah, I just wanted to give a justification for why I suggested the payment plan, and it's more of a precedent type of a thing. It is a loan of public money, and we have a fiduciary duty to recover it if possible. And as much as you might say, well, $5,000 is not a big deal and we'll just forgive it, I would suggest we use the 10-year plan. If they want to pay it off earlier, fine. If not, it's not a big deal. But it keeps us out of a precedent situation of in the future of, you know, someone understanding that it's the public's money and we have to deal with it that way.
Point well taken. Other board members?
I would agree completely that the tennis club is more than just the club members. It's for training the kids in tennis. It has kind of a community-wide appeal and use. And the fact our economy is what it is, I would agree completely with the 10-year, and certainly not the forgiveness, but the 10-year plan is minimal impact and something they could easily, I would think, do. So I agree with
Director D'Amico.
I'll yield to your gentleman's decisions. That's fine. But one of the things I just wanted to bring up, it's quick math, and it may not be totally accurate. But, you know, public-private partnerships sometimes get bad press. And I want to say that This is a public-private partnership.
Yeah.
It turns out, if the numbers are right, between 120 from the state parks, 10 from us, and then 60, 20, which is 80, it's like a 60-40. We put up 60, they put up 40%. And that's a nice ratio, and I think that that's good. Just like I brought up before, prior, because I have ideas regarding public-private partnerships, essentially we're responsible for solid waste pickup. And we have a public-private partnership in that regard because we've engaged a private company to do it. They interact with the customers and do the right job. We have a general oversight, and probably if anything was truly wrong with it, we'd act accordingly. So the only and why it's even, I think, rational to make a no interest, 10 years is fine, is that the capital upkeep, which is a three-party agreement, and I think everybody should live by their agreements. And, you know, we're not trying to earn money on it, as they say. We're not in an earning money situation. But your point, we really can't give away money. The original agreement was the sharing that was agreed to. So I endorse it. Thank you.
Anybody else have a comment? Yes, Director Chaldicott.
I was just thinking of long-term. We're hoping that we'll eventually have an active park, and there will be expenses there. And if we've set a precedent of giving away the money, we might have difficulty stopping it. Whereas if
That's
we
right.
give people an opportunity to put a little in each year and pay for it, I think it's a good idea.
I have no request to speak on this item. I detect a consensus to approve a 10-year payment plan. Is there a motion to that effect?
I would move we approve Resolution 59-2010, inserting in it the term of 10 years with a payment of $505.30 per year.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 59-2010 with the terms being a 10-year payment period at $505.30 per year. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That takes us to item 9B, which is consideration of adoption of the 2011 Cambria Community Services District regular board meeting schedule. Madam General Manager?
Okay, thank you. So this is something you consider every year, and we've attached it. It's on page 37. You'll see that in the bullet points, and I just have one question, but typically I look at the last year. So in the January 30th meeting that we propose, which is not the fourth Thursday, that's avoid setting up the conflict that happens here with the Art and Wine Festival, the setup. So that's why we chose the third Thursday. And then the November 7th, which is a third Thursday, you notice there's no Monday meetings just because of staffing issues. That avoids the conflict with the Thanksgiving holiday. And then for December 15th, the third Thursday, that avoids the conflict with the Christmas and New Year's holidays. I just wanted to confirm with Mr. Clift, the August date of 25 does not appear to interfere with Pine Dorado.
I checked that, too, and I don't think it does.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure that's the only
Pine
other
Dorado
date.
Pine Dorado is
the... It's the next week. The following
week. Yeah, the week after
okay.
that. Yeah.
Right.
So I don't see that as a
good.
So good. So those are the proposed schedules there on 37.
Is there a motion to approve the supplemental long-term water supply project cost estimates and financing options? Madam General Manager?
So thank you. Bob's been working very diligently on this report. I just, as a reminder, the background history was presented on September 23rd, and the supplemental long-term water supply alternatives considered was presented on October 28th, and both of those have been, you know, kind of pulled out from the agenda and put on AGP's website as individual items, as will this one today. So Bob has been busy with the Kennedy Jenks numbers and just fast-forwarding those to 2010, and I'm going to turn it over to him for the presentation today.
Thank you, Tammy. Mr. President, members of the board, thank you for the opportunity to present this information. It has been a busy time and looking at the old modeling work that was done back in 2000 in a report by Kennedy Jenks and updating that as best I could to reflect current conditions. And I do have a PowerPoint presentation here that I'll give in a minute to describe what happened. I am focusing more on the financing part of it and less on the cost estimate since that was covered at the last meeting, but if you do want me to go back and pull some of those slides up, I could. Carlos, if you could cue that up, I appreciate it. I think we need
this
a drum roll.
This is what is
known
as a pregnant pause.
A little technical difficulty.
We'll technical difficulty.
Do a little song and dance here for a while. I can tell you that part of my approach was looking at this report by Kennedy Jenks, and it's entitled Final Project Design Report, Desalination Project Management Series. It was dated April 13th, 2000, and I have one that was revised in May of 2000, May 3rd. And in the back of this report, there's a whole series of detailed spreadsheets that were, we didn't have the actual spreadsheets, so we had to really work hard to recreate as best we could in developing a model from that example and then applying it to the current cost.
Nope, still not coming up.
I was going to ask Bob, approximately how long were Kennedy Jenks involved in Cambria? Do you have an idea?
Well, they preceded my time with the district, so I want to say roughly around the 1998-1999 time frame is when they first started working for the district on desalination, and they probably went up through about the completion of water master plan reports about 2004 to 2005, somewhere in that time frame. And,
here you go.
Great, great. Are you going to use the hard copy then? Okay, that's fine. Thank you, Carlos. This will be a little smaller than what we normally have, but I think that'll work fine. Today's discussion is just going to cover a little background information, summarize the financial modeling, the overall approach used, some of the key inputs and assumptions. I'll describe the findings, and then I'll take questions. If you can move that up a little bit, Carlos, we'll. And just on some of the key studies in the past, again, the 2000 report that I just mentioned, and that had old numbers and assumptions, and they came up with about a 9.9% rate increase was necessary for the desalination project. In 2007, there was a much more comprehensive effort done by Black & Veatch called a long-term financial management plan. That did not separate out the sole impact of just a desalination project. It had everything in there, which is rightfully so. But I focused on just the impact of desalination in today's discussion. Also, the Black & Veatch study was not implemented. There was a Prop 218 protest, as you recall, so that kind of got sidelined. Again, my approach has been to update the past Kennedy Jenks model and just focus solely on the desal project by itself. So let's move up to the next page, please, Carlos. again, the top slide there is from last month's presentation. It's looking at the three different middle row, the inflated cost without the solar system was about $1,845,000 for local share, and then the local share for the one with a power with the solar power system is $2,775,000. So those are the key numbers that I ran with the modeling work, and we can certainly feed more scenarios into it in the future as we wish to do. At least I now have the basic capability to do that. Again, this is using the $3 million local credit that was approved recently from the WERDA amendment that was passed in 2008, as I recall. And again, looking at a 25-75% split, so they're I guess optimistic numbers, but I think if we are able to get the WERDA authorization increased, we should be able to get into that with future appropriations. Again, that's the two numbers I use in the analysis that follows. Next slide, please, Carlos. Okay. So the overall approach that I used included looking at the 2000 KNJINX model as an example to work from, and then updating it. I had to delete. It was interesting historical information too. Some of the things that got deleted out of it was the fact that in years past there was a retrofit and in-lieu fee program that people would pay into for water conservation efforts to offset the demand of a connection. And that income or that non-operating revenue is as much as $356,000 per year from that particular program that no longer applies. We don't have that money to work with. Another deletion that was of interest is that the non-operating revenue from interest, because the balance was so high, ranged from anywhere from around $400,000 to $600,000 per year, a very substantial sum that we don't have anymore. The connection fees that were coming back in the time frame of that 2000 report was about $167,000 per year, which, of course, are not being applied because of the moratorium. So I took that type of information out of there, updated based on the current local share and current O&M costs that we've been able to get from the past KNJINX report. Some of the key data input. Next slide, please. A couple other things. Each there was some iterative work involved in making sure the debt service ratio stayed above 1.10. and determining what kind of rate increase might be required for a particular year, you just iteratively until you make sure that debt ratio is above 1.10, and that's per bond covenants. We also assume that it had to stay as a self-sufficient water enterprise fund. That is, there is no moving money from general fund into the water enterprise fund. It had to stand alone as an individual fund. Next slide, please. Some of the key inputs and assumptions, again, this can all be tailored as we need to in the future, but the inflation for increase in cost over time was assumed to be 3%. The local share costs used a bond or a loan rate of 5% and spread it out over 30 years. The we assumed a fiscal year 2013-2014 for the initial facility startup timing. We kept within the 4,650 build-out maximum per the Water Master Plan. We noted and we took advantage of the fact that the refinanced 1995 bonds expired during fiscal year 2014 and 2015. Was fairly conservative in ramping up just how much the system might run. So we ramped it up. We used 50 acre feet per year in year one of the operation, which was, again, the fiscal year 2013-14 year. The demands for that first year are going to be much less than that from new connections, but we just went ahead and used 50, assuming that there'd be some startup issues to work with and so forth. That would keep that number relatively low. But ramped it up fairly aggressively to about 600 acre feet per year, which is the approximate maximum sizing, and that was reached in year 2022 and 2023. It could have been stretched out differently, but that was our basic input. For the future connections, we used 125 connections was for year one only, which was the maximum. Um, This should probably have a big draft stamped across it, but I do say key inputs and assumptions. The draft desalination impact fees are estimated at, this is just my rough work, about $13,000 per EDU with the solar power alternative, and assuming the CCSD would finance the capital cost of that project. Without the solar power system, again, the CCSD financing those capital costs, around $10,000 per EDU. And then you'll see in the next few slides, I developed a couple alternatives using a Mellow Roos type of financing mechanism. And some of you may recall that the lot owners were here maybe 5 or 6 years ago and did an excellent presentation on a Mellow Roos where they had actually polled their constituents and found that the majority, over the two-thirds vote required for a Mellow Roos, would actually support one to help pay for some of these capital costs, which would put the onus of covering that capital cost on those waitlist lot owners. So I did a couple alternatives on that. I did keep the existing EDU impact fee at about $3,250. So they'd have a $3,250 existing impact fee plus whatever that capital cost burden would come to for a Mellow Roos. Next slide, please. And I wish I had a nice color slide here. This is the these are the findings. Yeah, if you could blow that up as much as possible, Carlos. Great. It's kind of small print. The let me find my copy, too, so I can interpret for people. Basically, there were four different alternatives that came out of this work. The first line item is CCSD financing of capital, and that's with a solar power system. And the amount financed, again, was $2,775,000. The rate increase needed for year one is when the main increase hits is 13%. So compared to year 2000, it was 9.9%. We're at about 13% there. Without solar power, and again, CCSD financing the capital cost of for 2013-14. And without solar power and the same Mellow Roos type approach, it was about a 5% rate increase that becomes necessary in 2013-14. I did a couple of little illustrations below that help illustrate long-term how rates might look, because the model went out, I can't remember, 15, 20 years or so. It also shows the benefit of solar power in helping to stabilize rates over the long haul. So that first row, if you wish, of graphs, are there's a little sun that shows solar power next to each one. So the first column of graphs is with the CCSD financing. The top upper left quadrant shows what the rate increase would look like if you had solar power to offset the energy cost. So if you'll see, they're you know, pretty small, 2 to 3%, and the first rate increase that kicks in through this modeling is about year 13 after the initial operation. And if you look right below that in the lower left quadrant, that's again with the CCSD financing without solar power. That's why we have a little slash over the sun there. You could see the rate increases triggering a little bit earlier. Again, they're all less than 5%, but the first one that it projected would be needed was around year 7 versus going all the way out to year 13 in the graph above there. And similar, the two graphs on the right-hand side of that illustration, the upper right one is with solar power and a Mellow Roos-based financed approach that shows, you know, the initial year one operation needing roughly the 6%, and then the rate increases not being required until about year 15. But if you omit the solar power option, the first rate increases are needed by about year 7. And so that was the purpose of that, just to show some of the longer-term benefits on rate stabilization. And there's many ways you can do these analyses, too. You can start inflating power at a higher cost than inflation, which would reshape these graphs. But this is pretty much the basic analysis that was done. And at that point, let me see, what's the next slide on this? I think we're up to questions, I recall. Yes. So I'd be glad to.
In order to put this into some perspective, if you'll all indulge me for a moment, what the district eventually is going to have to do is hire what's called an assessment district engineer. These are engineers who specialize in looking at a new project like a desalination plant and determining the relative benefit that will accrue from the project to those who are existing customers of the district and those who will be hooking up to the water system in the future. And it's from that analysis that the assessment district engineer comes in with a recommendation as to how to apportion the cost. What percentage of the cost is attributable to existing ratepayers? What portion of the cost is attributable to those who will be hooking up to the system once the moratorium is lifted and the desalination plant is functioning? It's possible, theoretically possible, that an assessment district engineer could come in, do the analysis, and say, well, the existing ratepayers have paid for, through their water bills, they've paid for a lobbyist in Washington, D.C. They've paid for a lot of the front-end costs in terms of planning and so forth. And they achieved this $3 million credit in the WERDA bill. So the assessment district engineer could say that suffices for the local match required to build the desal plant in terms of the apportionment of benefit. Or the engineer could come in and say, look, assuming for the moment that there's a so-called quality of life benefit for the existing ratepayers, that is, the average consumption goes up to 18 units as opposed to 12, that the existing ratepayers are going to benefit to a greater degree than what they've already contributed to this project. All right, let's assume for a moment that there's absolutely let's assume that the only $20 million, including the solar component, that would mean that the folks on the water wait list have to come up with 75% of the cost, or $15 million. Existing ratepayers have to come up with 25% of the cost, $5 million. The obvious method of, and probably the best method of payment for the folks on the water wait list is to pay their portion, their 75% of the cost, through water hookup fees. In my opinion, the district presently is practically giving away water hookups. Our water hookup fee is so low when you compare with what cities and other water agencies charge to hook up to a water system. The charge is a quantum amount more than what we're presently assessing. A $22,000 to $23,000 hookup fee times the 665 positions on the water wait list gets you to $15 million real quick. For the existing ratepayers, the payment for the $5 million local share doesn't have to come out of water rates necessarily. It takes approximately, given current interest rates, it takes about $81,000 per year to pay the debt service on $1 million worth of financing. So if you want to raise $1 million, you got to plan on paying $81,000 a year for the life of the financing, 25 years, 30 years, roughly. All right.
If you want to raise $5 million, then 5 times 81,000 gets you to $400,000. That's the debt service on a $5 million financing, the $5 million being the local's 25% share. We have approximately 4,000 parcels that we serve. So if each one of those parcels is assessed on average $100 a year, then you can finance the $5 million, and it, I don't think, is going to dig in too deeply to the pockets of. This is something that the district can afford to do, even if there's no federal assistance for construction of the project. Board members?
Just a couple of questions. Who is this magical assessment district engineer?
Well,
besides walking on water. What?
Well, they exist.
Yeah, okay.
And whenever you take a large capital project and you talk about financing through tax-exempt financing, you form an assessment district. Somebody has to apportion
sure.
the benefit, and that's what they do. They come
and,
in, they
and
wave
the approval
the magic
is out by who?
By the district.
By the district.
That's right. So it, through a public process, the assessment district engineer comes in, presents his facts and figures, makes some recommendations, mm-hmm. and it's up to the board then to determine whether or not to accept the assessment district engineer's recommendations, and then you go forward with the financing if you do accept the recommendation.
And assuming your dialogue that was very clear, very understandable, very, very good, it would behoove us to be more like the 12 units versus 18 in order to go along with your scenario.
There's a very, very good public policy argument to be made to do that
mm-hmm.
because it would lower the theoretically, it would lower the cost to the existing ratepayers.
Exactly. And how did the $3 million credit and the lobbyist fees come into that? You mentioned that. I missed that.
Well, it's up to the assessment district engineer to determine, first, whether or not the existing ratepayers should benefit from having front-ended costs.
Yeah.
And how far back in time the assessment district engineer is willing to go and so forth will determine whether any or all of that $3 million credit that costs the existing ratepayers money to obtain should be attributable to the local ratepayer's share of the cost of the facility.
Excellent. Very good.
Yes, Director Cliff.
In your scenario, where you come up with, say, the $5 million that would have to be financed locally in the worst of all circumstances, and you're using the $81,000 and come up with a $400,000, which is basically...
Underwriters off with a stick. They'd be, there would be so many of them who would love to do that kind of an issue because, as you point out, Director Clift, the revenue streams are there. It's really a no-brainer. It's a slam dunk. And you're absolutely right. If you include that water rate revenue continuing to come in after those bonds are paid, it just really slashes the parcel assessment down to practically nothing. $2.50 a month, basically, is what it works out to.
My two cents is that one of the items that has been discussed, and by the way, with Alan, we do have as an assignment the issue of entertaining. We have proposals. We're going to be looking at some bond attorneys, and unless Greg corrects me, they will be able to probably suggest very people who are strong in this. I was bond engineer for some existing bonds that United Water had before I was with United Water, and that was my annual job. I had to, because a lot of bonds have requirements for a bond engineer to inspect the facilities to make sure that maintenance and operations is properly maintaining the asset. Because everyone needs to understand that when you buy a bond, especially a capital projects bond, theoretically the equipment should be there for the entire length of the bond. You don't want the plant falling apart after 10 years and you're paying it, you know, it's supposed to generate revenue for 30.
That comes under the not good category.
Right. So most good bonds require an annual inspection by a engineer license and to look at that. But these people that we're looking at when we present it to the community and to the rest of the board, will be able to guide us towards a competitive, if you will, engineer to do something like this. I just would like, from my perspective, is that the important thing here, and I don't want somebody running off with a number of, you know, $3 a month or $100 a year and say, wow.
Oh, exactly.
Or if it's 125 or 200, people saying, see, you misled us. The fact is, though, we're talking orders of magnitude that are not prohibitive to this community, to the 600 or so new customers. I mean, and I'm not trying to – the numbers, and again, I'm not endorsing whether it's 13%, 9%, or 8% at this point, but these are not – we had a 15% water and sewer rate increase. And by the way, this is on the water side. So it's not a 15% across the board or 20%, whatever the number works out. We're talking about the water side of the business, which is, I don't know, what is it, 60-40 roughly? Anyway, so my point is that these are all doable numbers, and I'm not at all talking about the level of numbers. But, you know, it was interesting in this last election, Atascadero, which is a population of 26,000, just sold approved $115 million in bonding. Mm-hmm. Well, if you just take one-fourth of that, and it is a city and there's a different category of maybe of income and makeup and maybe even issues, but the fact is a quarter of the 115 is 20 million. So somehow a community of relative size can undertake a debt of that regard. And I'm not saying just because somebody else does it, we have to do it. But the fact is, we're looking at numbers that are doable on an annualized basis of what's our average annual cost of water and sewer service? I mean, what's the normal bill is what,
$110 to $120. That's the average bill.
For every 2 months?
Every two months. So 60 bucks a month.
$60 a month, yeah. So if we're talking $60, $720, and we're talking $100, that's 12%. If you're talking 200, it's 24%. But you're getting an unlimited new water supply system, whether the gobies shut down wells, whether the Mother Nature shuts down the water supply, you've got a reliable system.
That's
so
right.
The orders, now, we can't nail it down at this time because there are things that still need to be done. But the numbers and the orders of magnitude are not. And by the way, this was only capital, so there may be another 3 or 5% because
operating
costs,
right?
You know, based on when, how much, how long. But again, these are not extraordinary numbers, and we have the ability. And you know, we're not misleading because we don't know it yet. But the rationale of new customers paying their fair share of the new facilities to guarantee the water supply that allows them to come in is done everywhere. And I, you know, reading actually, I did. Based on the companies, I went through all of their bonds and stuff that they've put out, at least as much as I can get out. Distribution has been paid by all the customers all these years, all the distribution system, all the collection system, all the wells and the mains and the hydrants are there, and they're really paying their fair share of the prior investment. So it's doable, and I expect that this will not be the problem. I mean, the problem is getting us over the hump of getting the right location, getting the right intake, and getting the right design going.
Right.
The construction will take care of itself, and the technology is there. And we'll probably argue a little about whether we prepay. Because solar is prepaying your future electrical costs. Don't, you know, this idea of no rate increase because we have solar, what you did is you paid up front.
That's
what it is, which is fine. I mean, I'm not arguing whether we do it or not. It's just that let's not mislead, it's not free electricity. When you pay $3 or $4 million for a solar array somewhere, wherever it is. It's there. But it's a good...
But also, too, there's the AB 32. I don't know if that got... Did that get defeated again, or did that make it... I know there's a proposition. I lost track of the vote on that. But I mean, there are requirements. They want to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
Oh, yeah. No,
this helps address that issue as well when you go through the environmental clearance process.
I'm just saying it's something that is, whether it's a desire of the community, which is very green, if you will, or a requirement of the state government, either way, it's still real money. You're paying 4% for those first 10 years of the cost of the solar. The only thing it offsets the electrical costs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Understandable. And I think, again, the diplomat Sanders said with the newest election, we'll see what happens. But Jerry Brown was probably the strongest advocate in the Attorney General's office to enforce every environmental requirement that came up. I mean, he was stopping bridge jobs until they did environmental impact statements on traffic. Because, if you build a bridge, they will come. Well, therefore, investigate. So I don't think, I'm not saying it's not going to happen. It will, because that one went down. That was defeated, the standoff on it. But I think it's doable. I think you're right. Whether it's some mix of the two financing, which means rate increase overall, which paid for by everybody, including pre-existing and new, and then whether it's a Mellow Roofs, I forget there's another couple of categories of financing that can be done. That'll give a good chunk. We've had that discussion probably on opposite sides earlier on in my time here and before. The more I read about it, in other words, you've laid out the blueprint.
Right.
It's just like, and I will not give, Bob has a model now. And we can start tweaking things. As we get new information, he tweaks the model, and the numbers drip down.
Absolutely.
That's what you're supposed to do, and that's good. So with your blueprint that we're talking about and that you've brought up, shows that there's a mechanism to do it, there's a protocol to follow, which we're trying to follow. The first will be the bond attorney, and then we get an asset engineer in. They can do their job, and that can be done, and, again, people, how do you know? Because if we do it on a $10 million or $20 million, once you do a $10 million, let's say, or $5 million, you do the mechanism. Whether it becomes 7 or 9, you just do the multiplication. What we need is the legal understanding that it can be done, the structure, input from counsel. Mm-hmm. Greg is very correct in this. A good revenue bond out of a water system, those things are going to be gold in the next 5 years, the way the government is pushing down treasuries and the rest.
Absolutely.
I mean, those ones we redid at 4.5%, I'm surprised they weren't. They could be 10 times oversubscribed if we had the ability to do it.
I think given the fiscal direction the district is going and the ability to kind of guarantee the revenue stream, I think any bond from this district would have a very, very high rating.
And that's, I know we're getting late, but I do want to bring that up too, because you just brought something up that didn't appear in your proclamations. If I remember correctly, and probably General Manager knows better since Alan's not here right now, there was a period, three, 4 years ago, it was probably 3 years ago, when we were talking about how much we really needed in rates to cover ourselves so that we didn't have a problem. But now, I'm sometimes just an order of magnitude person thumb, but you notice that our lay funds continue to go up each year, and they're higher than last year and the year before. That means the rate increase that we had, the cutbacks that our general manager has put in, the negotiations for givebacks, and it's been very important to us, and that's what we need. I mean, that's the responsibility that we're going to have. By the way, this is not an issue just for DSAL. I want to bring that up, too, because we're going to talk about that maybe in the next couple of meetings, if whoever is that we still have the two capital projects, or three capital projects, that are very important to the existing. Because you do, once you differentiate existing and new, the existing is looking for that new tank. They're looking for that new pump station, and we should put in the SCADA so that we can get higher efficiency out of our operating staff. Not more efficiency, but give them time to do the field work so that they don't have to be running around for pump stations looking at all this stuff, because we have, I guess I'll use as I tried to get Mark to, less than standard. They're not up to the latest standards in electrical technology in our water system and a sewer system. We have to do that. So there is a chunk there that needs to be looked at. And the model, whatever we put together, is going to be a model that we can apply to desal, to existing projects. And once we have that together, then we have a management structure for the the community, the CCSD, and our customers to understand what it's going to take to move forward with, whether it's the tanks, the pump station, the SCADA, or the desal. And, you know, I don't think everything's going to come together at the same time, because we've already, you know, like I said, we admit that it hasn't stopped it, but it has slowed it with our exploration. So I think there's things to be done there. Thank you.
Great. Well said. Thank you.
If I could just maybe segue one little point, too, but along the lines of other items. I did not include anything for build-out reduction, you know, in those earlier rough estimates on impact fees. So there's still going to be an impact fee separate and apart for the build-out reduction program. Right. I feel that would be associated with any alternative that's used for a water supply.
But and the
that
lot
would be
owners
on top of what was shown earlier.
So. The Unlock group is well aware of that.
Okay.
In fact, the last Unlock meeting that I attended in October, I explained to them, you know, this is probably the direction the district is going to go, and a lot of the stuff is going to be financed on the backs of the persons on the water wait list. You know, that's just the fiscal reality facing the Cambria Community Services District. They understand. And they know.
Want to make that clarification.
At some point, there would be a bond council, but yeah, we understood. Okay, I have one request to speak on this item from Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders. One of the things that I noticed missing from this discussion, I have no quibble with the fact that this community can probably afford the construction of a desalination plant. The question is whether we can afford to run it, because if you look at the estimations for energy used to create desalinated water, the most efficient theoretical is 3 kilowatt hours per 1,000 gallons. This is from the Pacific Institute's desalination with a grain of salt. And it says the approximate range of actual use is somewhere between 12 and 75 kilowatt hours per 1,000 gallons. And energy in California costs somewhere between 9 and something cents plus to 14 cents, and that's a good rate, and that may be slightly out of date and low. If you use 9 units per billing cycle, you're using about 6,700 gallons of water. So you're talking about 6,700 gallons times 14, 15 cents. You're talking about $20 a billing cycle, $120 a year per person, just for the energy.
Now, Amanda, let me stop you there. First of all,
sure.
The desalination plant is a supplemental water supply.
So it won't be used all the time?
No.
So it's not...
Number one, the Pacific Institute, I don't think, is the most objective...
I think that report and the fact, yeah. the source for that fact, before you argue that point, I think the source for those numbers are actually quite well-founded.
Well,
and
I think if you...
And that report does not advise against desalination at all.
Let me invite you to contact the United States Navy and do some research on the research that the Navy has done with regard to membrane technology. They've got a plant that they experiment with down at Port Hueneme. So that's on the primary source of water, and you need to cut back your cost projections accordingly. If we go down to if the quality of life increment is taken out, we're talking about 300 acre feet per year, roughly. Is that right, Bob? Is it about 300? Increment is taken out of the calculation for the capacity for the desal plant.
Approximately 400 acre feet, as I recall. I could double check that, but that's the number that jumps in my head.
So the district is presently consuming between 700 and 800 acre feet per year. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about a magnitude of half. One-third of the water supply, not the whole water supply.
Okay, so if you're using, say, 400 acre feet a year, that's somewhere around 153,000 gallons a year. So that's still going to be a significant cost, even if you factor it at 3 kilowatts per hour per 1,000 gallons, and even if you only calculate it at 9 cents per gallon.
I'm not arguing that
The cost of this plant is not just the construction.
No, it's not. But if there is a solar component, then I think those costs will go down even further.
I certainly hope so, because this is not going to be an inexpensive venture. I also am slightly concerned of going from almost no construction to 125. I don't know that you'd be able to get 125 people to ready to build in the first year, and whether or not the county would permit that many. It's just a concern.
It's intent to serve letters. That would be the trigger for payment of the fees.
Thank you. That
and
clarification helps.
It would take several years for the county to process that many.
So you may not even need the water right away anyway.
Right.
Thank you for that clarification. That helps.
You bet. Okay. I have no more requests to speak on this item. Yes.
Just to address some of the energy discussions, it's going to be less than 12. I mean, the 12 to 75 kilowatt hour per 1,000 gallons, it's going to be less than 12. Some of the numbers I've seen, and it depends on the level, but it is dropping over time with developments in membrane technology that are continuing in the industry, as well as the advent of certain energy recovery devices that didn't exist years ago. So it is getting better, but again, we're going to define it further as we gather data.
You bet. And one of the benefits of subterranean ocean water intake is that you get rid of a lot of the solids in the brine that you're pulling into the plant, so that you don't have as much to filter out, which theoretically cuts your energy cost. So we'll see where it all goes. I mean, we're talking in kind of theoretical numbers right now, but at some point in the future, I'm confident the board will have the luxury of wrestling with these items, because desalination will become a reality. Okay. Any other questions or comments on this, board members? There's no action required for this item, so hearing no more questions or comments, we'll move on to item 9D, which is consideration of adoption of Resolution 61-2010. An introduction of Ordinance 02-2010, adopting and amending the 2010 edition of the California Fire Code, the 2010 edition of the International Wildlife Urban Interface Code, and National Fire Protection Association Standard 1144. This was a matter that was continued from the last meeting, the October meeting, to a date certain, today's date, for the purpose of having Director D'Amico meet with Chief Miller to refine some language regarding remodeling and when the requirement for a sprinkler system in an existing dwelling would be required. Madam General Manager, do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, thank you. And so we did that. We had that meeting actually with Director D'Amico on November 4th, and District Council happened to be here for his office hours, so he was in on that meeting too, per the board's direction. I'm just going to start it off, and then we'll call up the Fire Chief Mark Miller to give any explanation and certainly answer questions. So the things, there's two places where I mentioned that there are strike-through versions. Unfortunately, they're not. So I'm going to go through some pages and indicate the wordsmithing that we did in our, from our 39. We left this out of the report inadvertently last month, but Mark took what the existing code had in it, and he bulleted it for just ease and reading and getting through, and showed all of the deletions that he recommended and actually took out of the prior code. Okay, so that was reflected in what you reviewed last month and then again this month. And we had mentioned that there's a strike-through version, but I just didn't want it in here because it would complicate things because it looks too much like the existing ordinance. But these bulleted items on page 39 and 40, these are what were removed after the fire department reviewed it and before they presented it in these last couple of months, okay? So then under the discussion, I tell you that we had the meeting and we met with Director D'Amico, and then I also say on page 41 that we're going to provide you with the strike-through format, and we didn't. We actually provided you with clean copies. So let me just take a couple of opportunities before Mark gets up here just to go through the pages. There's just a few changes, and we let you know where those were, starting on page 45. Under climatic, there's just a few changes in that second paragraph, starting on the fourth line, the very last word, capacity, that was a change. I think it was plural, and so we just put capacity. And then if you go down two more lines, starting with the sentence, Cambria's present water storage, you see that? That sentence was reworded. So now it says Cambria's present water storage capacity at a minimum is adequate for a response to a single structure fire. And then three more lines down, about middle way, you'll see the words and resultant. Those words were added from last month. The next page, 46, second paragraph, fifth line, the last three words, below current accepted, and then on the next line, standards. Those were added. And then right before the end of that last sentence that says, until a more reliable and permanent water supply, there was a sentence or two about the MTBE language. We deleted that. Okay, so it's not in here now, but we took it out. It just wasn't relevant. In that next paragraph, if you go to the bottom of that next paragraph and move up two lines, that last portion of it, in the event the water system is operating and undamaged by the seismic event, that was added. At the very bottom of that page, under topographic, in the second paragraph, third line, the last few words starting with below current access standards, and then into the next line, and pose challenges for responding emergency vehicles, that was reworded. That we got today from Mr. Clift on page 53, it's in 11-2, and it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines down. After the word sprinkler system, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, you see automatic sprinkler system, the first three words. He wants a comma and then these words inserted, if the building is expanded. So that's actually an addition to you today because he gave us this morning. So that right after automatic sprinkler system in parentheses, if the building is expanded. Okay, so that's the only additional change. And then if you go to the number four, if you remember the discussion last month from the section four, we actually broke them out just so that they're clear and the discussion's clear. So number four has the words on the starting at the end of the first line, by adding additional interior floor area. That's hopefully to make it clearer. And then the words, if the building, is on the next line. And then we busted out a separate number five, and then just itemized or bulleted those, and then we busted out six. It used to have its own bullet point, but we put number six, so that is if anybody adds a third level or a third floor to a structure, they would have the installation of fire sprinkler requirement. And then I'll call up Mark Miller.
Chief Miller. sitting there very patiently.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Was morning, now it's afternoon.
Hang around, you know, we may go on well into the night.
Well, I'm here to answer any questions that you may have. I want to start by saying that this ordinance has been in effect since 2003. It's the sprinkler ordinance. There wasn't anything new added to it. There was a considerable amount of stuff that was stricken from it this year. This is a ministerial code adoption that occurs every 3 years. This is the new edition of the California Fire Code, the 2010 edition, and we're trying to bring that in and adopt that formally here with the rest of the county and the organizations in the state. We are committed, as the fire agency for the community of Cambria, of offering the best customer service at the most fiscally responsible way that we can. This ordinance is designed to be progressive in that it takes the fire. If you have any questions on any of it at this time, I'll answer those for you.
Any questions of Chief Miller?
Kind of a historical thing. Are we now at a position where the state's caught up with us?
The state is getting there. They haven't caught up to us. Our residential sprinkler ordinance here is more aggressive than most of the state, but most of the state of California is now required to do new construction residential sprinkler systems, and a lot of the interface communities are catching up to where we were. We've actually been a front runner in the fire prevention end of it with the codes of the Urban Wildland Interface Code and the Interior Sprinkler Ordinance for quite some time. We've been a leader in that here. Have they caught up? They're getting there, but no, they're not quite there yet. But a lot of the ordinances that we're seeing are starting to look a lot like ours.
How about defensible space? Is that getting close or?
Well, the defensible space is a statewide ordinance. The PRC 4291, the 100 feet, that is a state regulation. What we have done here, because of the very narrow lot sizes, most of the community, we have trouble getting that. And we've introduced the weed abatement ordinance and the Urban Wildland Interface Code to try to armor the exterior construction of the homes and to give that as much defensible space as we can get by maintaining the vacant lots to try to compensate for that. We're in a high to very high fire severity zone here. We have a pretty serious interface problem in Cambria. And we're isolated. Our community is isolated. We don't have a lot of fire resources. So all of this is designed to try to build that into the community to where we don't have to try to ramp up or, you know, try to support fire suppression forces to deal with it once it gets out of a home into the trees.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Director D'Amico, did you have anything? By the way, thank you for taking the time to work on this.
I appreciate it. And I want to thank Mark Miller and Tammy and Rudick, our general manager and council. We had a good meeting, and my sensitivity to a finding statement, it maybe is outlandish, but it's important to me. Page 46. Do you have a copy of this so we can look at it? Can somebody please give him a real copy?
I've got an older copy.
No, that's what I'm saying. We can't have a good, intelligent discussion if you don't have the right reference. But yeah. Because yeah. I want to make sure I'm not trying to change anything on what you put together. The first main paragraph that starts, although.
Okay.
I'd like to make it a positive statement, because it is a positive statement. If I would strike the word although and put a period after ISO, the statement would read, the CCSDFD and water system in Cambria are currently rated class 5 by the ISO, which is the insurance services. That's a fact. Okay?
Yes.
And then after that period, put however with a comma, It is possible, and that's because I'm not diminishing the idea of a major fire flow requirement, because it could be disrupted and automatic fire suppression systems would be the only means of extinguishment. As you said, I want to make sure that we recognize that we are a five. And for the community, so that they know that we have done, and I think you do a great job too, is our system is good. I looked up the ISO Public Protection Classification Program, the ISO, mm-hmm. and we're a class five.
Correct.
Across the country, there's only 3.4% of communities that have a better coverage than we do. Now, it is geographic in a way, because class five means that essentially a fire department's within 5 miles of everybody who's covered. So just because we're a relatively tight community, we meet that. But it also shows that there, if you go the other way, because we're within the 12%, actually in the first 20% quartile of coverage. So we have an active and great fire department. We also have Cal Fire. So we actually have double in that 5 mile area. So we are, and that's why I say that's a good statement to have in there. But we do want to recognize, which is what you've been, and I think our prior chief has been indicating, that because we are so intermingled with the forest, we have other issues that need to be addressed, and that's the purpose of the findings, right? Okay.
Yeah, that's correct. The purpose of the findings is nothing more than to justify our ability to amend the code to suit our needs.
Finds what their responsibility is going to be and what they're going to have to do.
Those were good comments. Yeah. That was a good discussion that we had, and I wholeheartedly agree with those changes, although I want you to rest assured that we never enforced it. Yeah. In such a way that, you know, that
was detrimental.
Was detrimental to the community.
Right, right.
We enforced it in just the way that it's worded now. I think it was just a little bit confusing. We didn't interpret it that way, but it definitely could have been.
So appreciate it. So thank you for your for your work on it. And
so, Chief Miller, were they frank and open discussions?
I think they were. Yes, they were productive though. So.
Yeah. Exactly. Any more questions of Chief Miller? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. I have one request to speak on this item from Amanda Rice.
Thank you. I just wanted to thank Frank and Chief Miller for putting their heads together and for some of the changes that were put into the appendix that goes along with the ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Appreciate your comment. Okay. If there are no more questions or comments, and by the way, again, thank you, Frank and Chief Miller and Tammy, for taking the time to do the rewrite that was necessary to make sure everybody knows what is intended. With that, we have four recommendations, and what I'd like to do is break it down into two motions and take care of Resolution 61-2010 first, which is recommendation number one, and combine that with recommendation number four, which is direction to the staff to submit the resolution, if adopted, to the County of San Luis Obispo, and once ratified by the Board of Supervisors, to forward the resolution on to the California State Buildings and Standards Commission, as required by California Health and Safety Code Section 13869.7. So, is there a motion to adopt recommendations 1 and 4?
I'll make a motion to adopt recommendation 1 and 4 of the resolution.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 61-2010 and to direct the staff to submit the Services District, adopting and amending the 2010 edition of the California Fire Code and 2009 edition of the International Wildland Urban Interface Code and the National Fire Protection Association Standard 1144. Is there a motion to introduce Ordinance 02-2010 and waive further reading of the ordinance and to schedule a public hearing at the December 13th regular board meeting to consider adoption of Ordinance 02-2010?
I'll I'll move to adopt the ordinance 020 and by title and waive further reading.
And to schedule the public
hearing? And to schedule a public hearing. Oh, that's right. The part. Schedule hearing for December 13th, regular board meeting to consider the adoption of the ordinance.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to introduce ordinance 02-2010 and to waive further reading after the title has been read, and to schedule a public hearing for the December 13th, regular board meeting to consider adoption of ordinance 02-2010. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Again, thank you all for your work on this. Very much appreciated. That leads us to the last item on the agenda today, which is item number 10, the second public comment period. And I have two requests to speak during the public comment period. The first is from Harry Farmer.
Good afternoon. I notice the clock up there hasn't been changed from daylight savings time. I have to remind myself that I've only been here for 3.5 hours and not 4.5 hours. It just feels like it. Just a couple of comments. First off, during Engineer Dressen's presentation, when he was talking about what had prevented the Army Corps of Engineers from pursuing the test well drilling, a couple of comments were made from two directors. Chairman Sanders, you made the comment, I'm just quoting you, you said the so-called nature preserve. And Director Clift, you made the comment, state parks is no friend. I've mentioned in the past that I was going to be, among other things, an advocate for Mother Nature when I stood. A number of unusual things happened. One of the efforts I made to get out there into the public airwaves, my concern about the issues was that I recorded two particular spots on the local radio station KTEA. And the arrangement was that there would be four spots a day, and that each of these spots would run twice for 2 weeks. So imagine my surprise when I, and by the way, the folks at KTA were very helpful in recording these spots, as well as recording all of the about 20-minute interviews of all four of the candidates. So I want to commend the staff at KTEA for helping us in that regard and getting the information out to the public. But with regard to myself and the two ads that I was going to have run alternating on the air, like I say, twice a day, each ad would run for 2 weeks. So imagine my surprise when I got the readout for when my ads ran. One was titled Model Community. And in that, I referenced the fact that in October 2009, I'm going to read the whole thing, but I referenced that in October 2009, Sunset Magazine named Moonstone Beach one of the top 10 beaches in the West Coast. And that in May of this year, Forbes Magazine described Cambria as one of America's prettiest towns. And then I state, presently, our community is at a crossroads. The opportunity to create an environmentally friendly, cost-effective, sustainable water source is upon us. And then I go on. And I read that in a rather, let's say, in a slower pace. And then I had another one called CCSD Expenses, which I will read in a moment. So like I said, when I got the readout and I noticed that, well, gee, the first day is supposed to run for 2 weeks. The first day, October 15th, both Model Community and CCSD Expenses ran. But the rest of the 2 weeks, only Model Community ran. So since the CCSD Expenses spot never really saw studies, legal fees, and travel expenses. Since 2004, then it's been a hired lobbyist in Washington, D.C., who is currently being paid $6,000 a month, all done to promote a desalination project for a town of 6,500 residents. Yet at CCSD meetings this past summer, board directors McKinnon and D'Amico, engineers with decades of experience in project management and fiscal accountability who both favor desal, stated they were not comfortable with moving forward with the project as it is because we do not know how much the project will cost or where the money is coming from. Those statements were made right here. Somehow, in some unusual way, except for the first day, that spot never ran. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Farmer. The next request to speak is from Amanda Rice.
I do seem like I feel like I get more than my fair share up here at the lectern, and I do get lots of response in the community that thank me for being here in Summit, that ask me why I make the comments.
You're always welcome.
Thank you. I know that everybody in the community is always welcome to come and use their 3 minutes. So I just wanted to report that Marin on last week had two measures on their ballot, S and T, regarding desalination, and both measures passed with over 56% of the vote. Measure T, which was put on the ballot by the citizens, was to get the board in Marin to stop doing any of their planning on desal until there's a vote of the people. It wasn't to say desal yes or no, but it was just we should have a vote before another dollar gets spent. That one passed by 56%. Measure S, which was put on the ballot by the board, was that the community would have a vote on desalination at the point that they were ready to build or construct the plant, that the planning would go forward, but when they were ready to actually build, that it would go to the voters. That one passed with 69%, and there was a provision in that one that effectively said if they have that kind of input from the community and a vote, and I think that's what the community here said when they voted for the two candidates who won. So I just wanted to report that, and I think that it's not a bad idea for this town to also be looking down the road, that that's part of what will have to happen before an actual plant is built. We're early in the process right now, and it's too early to have a vote, but I think at some point it's probably going to be necessary, regardless of which kind of financing procedures you guys take. Thank you for the time.
Thank you very much. I have no more requests to speak. Is there anybody in the audience who did not fill out a request to speak who would like to address the board during the second public comment period? Seeing none, board members, any comments? Once again, it's been a pleasure serving as a director for 8 years. I want to thank the citizens of Cambria for giving me the opportunity, and board members, it's been a real pleasure working with each and every one of you. I'm going to miss you. Thank you. We're adjourned.